Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of We Used to Be Best Friends. I am your host, Sabrina, and today's episode, we have a special guest. Her name is Hattie Hyder, and you probably know her all over TikTok. I know her from TikTok. She is a self-development coach, entrepreneur, and a social media creator as well. And social media, what else? Developer, right?
Yeah, like self-development coach, and yeah, creator really, just in general. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about how you started doing your videos on TikTok and kind of like what kind of videos you enjoy making.
Yeah, I think I started creating videos on TikTok really from like a place of wanting to heal and really make sense of my experience, especially when it came to just somebody who is very emotionally charged. Somebody who, yeah, maybe didn't necessarily understand like why certain things happened, especially when it came to like my people pleaser journey. That was definitely something that I wanted to like discover more about. So I just almost like created them for myself initially, just to kind of like heal from that the people pleaser kind of recovery process. And naturally it's kind of led me down that path of friendships, navigating relationships. I actually started off talking about relationships with men because that was something that was like I was going through at the time, just like healing my relationship with men, not caring about like the male gaze and that kind of thing. And really, because it used to really hurt me, like any breakup or any sort of ending of a situationship. And then it kind of extended onto friends because I basically recognized mostly last year that I had a lot of people that I'd accumulated in my life that were not good for me, but I had kind of like not been that intentional necessarily with my friendships up until that point. Obviously some of my friends, I've still got great friends, but just certain people I just didn't feel comfortable around. And really that process of past year, especially just using the videos as like a healing tool and a reassurance tool to know that I'm not the only person going through these like friendship breakups or realizing that people aren't for you. So it started off like that, really, just wanting to process it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. That was kind of the same journey as me. So I just started doing TikTok videos just to heal. I didn't think anyone was going to watch it. I didn't think anyone was going to watch his videos.
Wow. Yeah.
And then it kind of blew up and I was very shocked that discussions on friendship and friendship breakups was such a prominent thing. And I guess I thought it was just me because anybody I talked to about it, they're just like, oh, get over it. You're fine. It's just a friend, whatever. And I'm like, why am I crying? So it's amazing that you're also another creator that has been using TikTok as like a way to heal and kind of talk things out. It's honestly a very amazing space. And that's kind of how like I met you. A few of my followers ended up sending me like your videos. And I started watching your videos and I'm like, oh, I like her. Love her accent. And then your video started popping up on my For You page, and then I was just like, all right, I'm gonna follow her, she's really good, like I can tell like you're gonna grow and you give like really good advice. And yeah, that's kind of like how we started, I guess.
Yeah, no, I remember like somebody commented like, you guys need to do a podcast, so here we are, perfect. Yeah, no, I know.
I got a few followers like that too. They're like, Hattie and you should do a podcast. Yeah. I was like, all right, you guys already know. No, yeah. But it's good.
We're giving them what they want, so perfect.
Yeah. Okay, so a lot of the videos that I have watched from you, you do touch on friendships a lot too, with friendship breakups and stuff like that. There was one video that I really enjoyed watching, and that was your concept of attracting friends and other videos of you talking about toxic friends as well. Could you give us a little bit more of insight into like your philosophy on attracting better friends, and how has that worked for you?
Yeah, so I really think it fundamentally comes down to self-trust and self-esteem. As I kind of said at the beginning about my relationship with men, and I think it works the same here, it's like, it's like have building up that self-esteem to the point where you will not tolerate any BS from anybody. And I think that's what I recognized was the thing that I needed to focus on, rather than just hoping that somebody would want me or a friend would want me or that a friend would like me, for example. It was really just like going, and it sounds cheesy, but going within and just really building up that self esteem and self-trust to the point where you don't need to worry about that. Like, you're not even thinking about whether or not somebody likes you or doesn't like you. You're just in your, kind of like, I think what I realize is as well, is like, even through this journey, is recognizing that you're going to be polarizing no matter what. There's going to be people that don't like you and there's going to be people that do like you. And that's where you know you're being authentic and attract the right people. And I think that kind of goes on to what I feel is really significant, is the more authentic you are and the more you can have high self-esteem, like who you are cutting out the BS. You are saving yourself so much heartache when you are authentic, because the right people will stay, so they'll be drawn to you and they'll be attracted to you, and the wrong people will be repelled by you. And that's exactly how it should be. When we're people pleasers or we are so focused on being liked, we are more concerned with being liked being liked than we are being respected, and that's when it can be really dangerous. I don't know, do you feel like that's something that you agree with, you know, that authenticity is really where you're going to cut out the BS?
Yes, 1,000%. I'm like, preach, girl, preach! No, it's so very, very true. And I say this in my videos too, you have to get to your true authentic self, and you have to start loving yourself more than anything, so that you don't tolerate anyone else's bullshit anymore. And you get to this point where in your healing journey, where you see these types of behaviors in people that you recognize in past friendships or relationships, whatever it is. And then you're just like, okay, I've been down this road before. I don't want to do that same mistake. I'm going to choose the path not taken. And you decide to go a different route. And I don't know if you've experienced this, but it's like such an empowering feeling to just be like, nah, not for me. I'm going to choose me first, and I'm going to go a different route. Like, and I get a lot of people telling me, well, maybe you have to give somebody a chance. Maybe you have to give them the benefit of the doubt. Benefit of the doubt. I've done that for years, and it has not benefited me. It has filled me with doubt on my choices, and I end up in this place where I'm like, why did I even pick this person in the first place? And it just spirals. So respectfully, absolutely. No.
and I get frustrated with that phrase too, because I think people who are told that have already given that person a lot of chances, usually. And I think that's what I always think to myself, you know, when I'm at the point where I'm like, really, I don't want this person in my life anymore. Like, I've already given them enough chances at that point. And I think the whole benefit of the doubt thing, I often think that's usually like a projection of that person, because when we're in this situation where we've been tolerant or we've put up with certain behaviours, you know, we're past that point of already having given them the benefit of the doubt. So it's kind of like a piece of advice, because, and anyway, it's like a balance. Like, you kind of know when you've given somebody, like I said, like enough chances, and it's just, it does irritate me when I do hear that, because I often think it's like that kind of enabling kind of
it minimizes people's behaviors and it puts the responsibility on you. Like, oh, I have to take the responsibility because I'm being too harsh.
Yeah.
Like, no.
That winds me up. Yeah. It's definitely like, it's not black and white. And also all these situations where you're with, you know, maybe you want to break up with a friend, or you want to break up with a partner, or just like walk away from somebody. It's so nuanced, and you know in your gut what's right anyway by that point. They don't know your experience necessarily. So like I said, it's back to that projection thing of, they don't know what you've experienced. I remember one of my, the first person that I ever broke up with in terms of like a friendship was like really hard, because there was somebody who we were like a three, and that person chose to kind of side with the friend that had been hurting mm-hmm. me. I remember thinking like, why can't they see what I see? And it's really just because they fundamentally haven't lived your experience, and not everybody's going to have the same experience with that person as you have. And I think that's where maybe gaslighting can take place, because you start to think, you know, is there something wrong with me? Like, and that's what people who are manipulative want you to feel like. They want you to feel like alone, and they want you to feel like you're crazy, or like that you're the only person experiencing that. And that's actually something that this ex-friend said. They said, well, nobody else in my life has experienced this from me. And I'm like, oh, okay, but that doesn't mean that my experience and so it's kind of like, not everybody's going to have the same experience of that person, and but that doesn't mean that your experience is invalid.
Exactly. Like, so I mean, I'm sure I've been a villain in somebody's story, and it's a terrible, shitty thing to do if that person comes up to you and is like, hey, you hurt me, and you're just going to be like, nah. It's icky. I don't know how to explain it, but sometimes you have to take responsibility of the fact that you did hurt someone in the way that you behaved. And maybe that was not your intention, but I mean, for those that are not manipulative, I'm talking, but for those that are manipulative, they know what they're doing. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think, you know, that comment of kind of dismissing how you feel is really just like, I always think of that as like a self-soothing thing, because they can't bring themselves to think, you know, it's like they're putting their ego in front of the friendship, really. When I hear that, when I think, because if it was me, and if somebody came to me and said, look, Hattie, these things have been bothering me, I'd want to immediately fix it. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I wouldn't be a bit taken aback. Obviously, we're all going to have human emotions. We might be a bit like, whoa, I didn't even realise that. Like, shit, I'm sorry. But I think if you, you know, in that moment, the way that somebody decides to handle it is really like either their pride or it's care for the friendship. So which one is it? And I think when somebody decides to either gaslight you, minimise it, like negate your experience, I always just think, we're not friends anymore, because you've chosen your ego and the preservation of who you think you are over our friendship. And like, that's, I don't have time for that.
1,000%. Same. If somebody came up to me and was like, hey, you said this, Sabrina, it was mean, I didn't like it, you insulted me in whatever way, I'd be like, whoa, same. And then I'd reflect on it and be like, okay, I care about this friendship, so I need to fix myself. I need to stop being super harsh or whatever it is. But yeah, the ego thing, as soon as you start telling someone, oh, that's not what happened, that's not how I viewed it, it doesn't matter. Like, your intent, it's how, what was that word? It's like, it's not intent, it's how the impact. Yeah. It's the impact is what matters, not really the intent. So you might have all like, you might want the best, but then if your impact is not great, you got to work on that. So like, the result is what matters at the end of the day. Yeah.
I think as well, like, let's hope that nobody would do that stuff intentionally. Like, we expect that they wouldn't have done that intentionally. You know, if they're our friend, or our partner, we're going to anticipate that they obviously wouldn't have done it necessarily with intent, or we hope that they wouldn't. So we already know that it wasn't intentional necessarily, but it does irritate me when people say like, oh, you know, I didn't mean to. Of course, I gathered that. Like, of course, I would hope that you wouldn't be doing that intentionally. So really, again, at this point, let's talk about the impact that it had. Yeah, it's a weird thing. Well, not a weird thing. It's a very normal thing for people to focus on, but it's a very unhelpful thing to focus on.
Yeah. I mean, I've, excuse me, I've noticed that those that start to try to minimize and try to gaslight and kind of blame shift and start talking about your faults when you bring up an issue, to me, I've learned that they know. They know. They know what they've done. They know. Because I feel like somewhere deep down, if I did something that was like little iffy that wasn't right, I would have that feeling that something in the back of my mind's like, okay, I think I did something bad. And when someone calls you out on it, it's either you take accountability and you're like, yes, I did it. I did something bad. It wasn't, whether it's my intent or not, I still did it. I still chose to do it. But the whole, if I stood there and I was like gaslighting you and flipping the script, then you just don't want to be held accountable. You know exactly what you did. You did it on purpose and you're standing 10 toes down in it. And that to me, immediate friendship, no, no. Like, I'm out.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like, oh, right, that's what your go-to is. Yeah, it's such a shame. It's such a shame when people do that. And I think as well, like, certainly with this friend that I mentioned earlier, they kind of held themselves as this empathetic person, somebody that was reasonable and level-headed and so on. So when they started minimizing my experience and so on, I was then gaslighting myself thinking, yeah, but this person's told me so many times that they're empathetic and they understand, so therefore the problem must be me. And it was really quite a big process to actually hang on. I remember one of my other friends saying, like, Hattie, maybe she did know what she was doing. And that never occurred to me because I just, first of all, thought the best. I was also in denial because I'd chosen her to stay in my life, keep her in my life. So that was like technically like a bit of an ego bruise to me. Ugh, there's so many complex things going on. But yeah, I remember just that moment when this friend said this to me and I was like, oh my God, no, I'd never even thought that maybe she did it deliberately or was hurting me purposefully or wanted me to feel downtrodden. But it was that realization, like you said, that yeah, actually some people unfortunately do this deliberately, and when they get called out for it, it's almost like, ah shit, I've been found out, and then they double down. Yeah,
sure. A thousand percent. I feel like we had the same friend. It's my close friend. When I told him like the entire story of what happened with my ex-best friend, same thing. He's like, do you think she did this on purpose? And that's where like I was like twitching. I was like, what do you mean? Yeah. Put all the pieces together and it's like, yeah, I think so. Because it wasn't just her getting caught and like doubling down. It was also her bringing other people into the fold and telling them a story about me. So that she has like her little minions behind her, and then suddenly I have like two bullies behind me being like, well, you did this, and I'm like, no. Yeah. Yeah. But it's quite interesting.
Yeah, it is, and it's kind of scary as well, because then you realize who your true friends are. You're like, hang on, like this person is, and it's such a difficult one because I am of the school of thought of like kind of both sides, and not both sides like that, but I know what it feels like for somebody to do like, for me to kind of, I don't know, maybe fall out with one friend, or for somebody hurts me and then I say no, and then the other friends kind of back them, which is extremely painful, very frustrating, because you're like, hang on a minute, like you haven't heard me out yet. But I've also been on the side of like, somebody's really hurt me and mutual friends have chosen to continue to be friends with them. And it's such a difficult one because it's like, oh my God, you can see from both sides how like both are valid. And it's really just like situation relative, you know, it's all about context and nuance. But yeah, absolutely. Like when a group of friends doesn't want to hear your side of the story or hear you out, they were never your friend in the first place. And that's an extremely upsetting thing to recognize, because you're like, you can't even, I think it's also like just the social ostracization feeling of like, I think definitely in the past people have, or maybe mutual friends have decided to kind of go with the other person, perhaps because they don't want to be ostracized either, or they don't want to experience like maybe losing a friend or something. But then it's kind of like, it's giving spineless, because I'm just like, you've got to have your own opinion. Wow. And it's just, yeah, I mean, do you feel the same? Like you kind of feel in a different way?
Yeah, I've talked about this a few times. I don't believe in the neutral friend. I don't. I just because I think it is very difficult to have the ability to have boundaries with two different friends and not talk about one friend to the other friend. I think people in general are not good at doing that. And if you are good at that, then you're a rare, rare human being. But most people, it's like they're not able to stand there and shut down a conversation if somebody's talking badly about your friend. Most of the time, they'll just sit there and they'll listen. And maybe they won't go back and tell that friend, but it's like you're kind of the monkey in the middle and you're enabling the situation by not shutting it down. Yeah. So I don't really believe in the neutral friend. I think like if I come up to you and I tell you, hey, this friend has really done me dirty, and it's not like a petty thing. It's not like something that it could be easily discussed or fixed. It's something that like she really did something bad, like really bad, to the point where there is no return for me. There is like friendship and no contact. If you've gotten to that point and your friend doesn't even want to listen to you, or your friend listens to you and still sides with that person, respectfully, they've dug their grave and they've made their choice. And if they come back crying to me saying that that friend did the same thing to them, sorry. Like, I feel bad, but at the same time, I'm just like, you kind of made your choice there.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of what you were saying. It's like, it's really about the situation. Like you said, if it's petty, it's a bit of a different story. Especially if you know both sides as well, and you still choose to kind of go with the person that's clearly been disrespectful, or kind of, like you said, be that neutral friend, even though that's probably unlikely. It's actually a reflection of the fact that they're probably more similar to each other than, I don't know, it's kind of like, there's a phrase, it's like,
birds of a feather flock together.
Exactly. It's kind of like when that's happened, I kind of just think, oh, well, you're not as similar to me. You're not as similar to me as I thought I was. As I thought you were. And, you know, if they're able to come, this is what I used to think. It's like, if they're able to comfortably ignore that, like there's so many things that they're going to have to uncomfortable, or like they're going to have to ignore in order to like maintain a relationship with that person or a friendship with that person. Like if that comes, if you know, thinking about authenticity in that, how is that practical? Because it's not like if you're a bit like, I kind of know what you mean. Like, you know, even somebody just letting you vent or whatever about another friend, it's kind of like, I don't know, nothing feels comfortable about that. It doesn't feel right. And, you know, you shouldn't really even, have to kind of like be in that neutral position where one person's like kind of offloading onto you and then the other person is as well. Like, that's a very exhausting kind of existence as well for that person. But yeah, I think I don't think that it's something that it doesn't promote authenticity, because you're having to pretend, you're having to ignore, you're having to put a version of yourself or mask for different people. Like, that doesn't for your own authenticity and your own like richness of friendships.
But I think it's also, if you're comfortably able to ignore that with someone, then maybe this is like my own extreme thinking, but this is kind of like how I see it. It's like, if they're able to put a knife in my back and you're okay ignoring that, then you're probably in the same situation, you would have done the same. So
exactly. So it's like it goes back to that phrase, isn't it? Like, birds of a feather, they flock together. Like, that's true. Like, if it's like having to ignore it, having to essentially like accept it and condone it. Like, I would, I couldn't do it. And I've had it, seen situations before where somebody's been absolutely horrendous to somebody else. And I've completely just like, not been mean or anything about it. I don't want them to feel like isolated, because at the end of the day, maybe I wasn't there or whatever, but I just sort of see them in a different way. And I think, you know, I can't ignore that. I know what you mean. It's, you can't like, you can't.
Yeah. But I feel like maybe you and I are in the same space where we want friends that not only are authentic, but also call us out on when we're making mistakes. Because I've done it a few times where I've legit seen a friend do something horrible to somebody else, and they come to me and trying to see if I will enable it. And I'm like, no, honey, I think you are in the the kindest way possible. I'd be like, hey, I think you were wrong in this situation. Whether that was your intent or not, it doesn't matter. Like, either you're going to try to fix it and apologize for it. And then I give them that opportunity to, like, reflect on it, think about it. A lot of friends that want more, like, yes men, yes women, enablers, you can tell after you call them out on that behavior that they kind of ghost you after that.
Yeah, that accountability allergy, like, it's uncomfortable. I think maybe people that enable also struggle with accountability sometimes because they wouldn't necessarily do that for somebody else. Like, they, I think when you're somebody that can kindly, and I think that's a really key point, is kindly sort of call somebody out or kindly, you know, hold somebody accountable, even if it's not necessarily directly towards you, I think they're really valuable friends. And I think those are the sort of people as well that typically can also hold themselves accountable and also take criticism. I think, I don't know if you're a recovering people pleaser or not, but certainly for me, like, as a, that, I find it typically quite difficult to take criticism. So for a while, I probably, when I was at school, I was a bit of a enabler. Mm-hmm. And then I start to really value people calling out my bullshit. And I also started to get more comfortable with calling other people out. And it sounds like, you know, oh, we're calling each other out all the time, but no, it's just like, you know, you want to hold your friends accountable. Obviously you love them. And I also think that holding them accountable is a sign of love. I think that enabling isn't a sign of love. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're not being honest with them and you're not showing them love. And I think people often think that, like, either confrontation or sort of raising an issue can only be done in a really sort of violent way or like a really like aggressive way. And it's like, no, you can do it in such a loving way, and not a patronizing way either. Like, you know, it's so easily done. But I think, yeah, I'm not drawn to people that are enablers. I'm not drawn to people that can't hold themselves accountable. It's a complete ick for me, because that to me is something that I will, like, even if I find it difficult, I will do, because you know, you care about the other person. Or also, like, the way I see it is, like, it's helping me develop and grow.
Exactly.
So I'm gonna have blind spots. Like, I need to know.
Yeah. So, like, we do enough self-reflection, but sometimes, like, having an outside person tell us, like, hey, you got to hold yourself accountable for this, it helps. And then you can, like, work on growing, developing. I don't know. I feel like, at least for me, with the friends that I have, I want to see them be their best self, like, grow and have a better potential and, like, be the best that they can possibly be. I don't think that life is about being stagnant. Like, you grow in age. Why can't you grow in mentality?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's funny, isn't it? Because you sometimes, it really, stuff like that really shows that age as well. It doesn't indicate maturity, because there's literally, like, full-grown adults out here who have never taken accountability, can't say sorry or sort of not function through their ego. Like, it's okay, I think, when you're a child, but, and you're a teenager and a young adult and stuff, when you start to kind of get a bit older, you think that you realise that those things benefit you, or not, they're not holding you back. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was kind of mind-blowing for me through this journey that, you know, you always look up at your elders, you always look up at, like, people that are older than you, and you expect them to be wise, and you expect them to know so much, and then suddenly I'm more wise than a lot of older people, and they don't want to hold themselves accountable, they do the whole gaslighting, the blame shifting, and it's like, you're looking at a big human baby.
It's also just like, how, like, I suppose I just think, like, how have you not encountered so many situations? Like, they would have encountered so many situations where they would have had the option to hold themselves accountable or whatever, but they would have basically avoided every single one of those situations. And it's like, it's such a shame, because it really does, like, propel you forward. It really does, like, help you grow into a better person. And I'm really conscious of, like, not being judgmental in a sense, because I always feel like, you know, they didn't have the tools at the time necessarily, because, you know, they didn't have social media, and, you know, I feel like TikTok's massively helped me grow and things like that. But I think some people do have a particular desire to grow and other people don't. And And some people tend to kind of like keep staying that victim mentality and other people don't. And I think, you know, I obviously have empathy for those people, but I do sometimes think, oh my God, it's a realization that not everybody actually does want to grow. They just want to stay as they are. And like, I wouldn't want to do that, but some people do. And that's interesting. Yeah,
it's not for me. But I've also started to realize that holding yourself accountable is not just like with the ego part of it. It's also understanding that if you change your behavior, if you continue to behave in a bad way, you're going to eventually, I guess, become a bad person if you keep behaving in a bad way. And I think that that's the problem that comes with accountability. It's that when someone holds you accountable for something that you did that was bad, wrong, people automatically assume that, oh, I must be a bad person because I did a wrong thing. I did a bad thing. And I'm like, no, we're calling you out on a behavior that needs to change. And once you acknowledge it and you work on changing it, then you're no longer behaving in a bad way, in a wrong way. And it doesn't make you a bad person if you're working on bettering yourself. And I think that that's like kind of the disconnect with a lot of people. It's like, oh, you're not calling me out on my behavior. You're telling me I'm a bad person. And that's not the thing. Yeah, like, absolutely. I mean, eventually if I call you out on lying and you're like, oh my God, I'm a bad person for lying. But then you continue to lie and you continue to lie. And for years on years on years, you continue to lie, then sooner or later, you are going to become a liar. Mm-hmm. Like,
Yeah.
So it's just quite interesting to me because I guess the more you heal, the less you take it personally too. So if someone calls me out, I don't take it like as a personal offense. I'm not like, oh my God, I'm a horrible person. I'm just like, okay, thank you for calling me out on this. This is something that I need to work on. Maybe I already know it and I'm like, oh, yes, I know I have to work on this. And then I keep like going to therapy, working on it, trying to really figure out, dig deep on why I'm doing these types of behaviors. But I don't see my friends calling me out on it as a bad thing. Like I actually respect them more.
Exactly. And they probably respect you more because it's kind of like that crossroads moment where you know, you've been told about a behavior that isn't ideal and is hurting people. I guess the path where you're actually going to feel less like a bad person, if that's how you feel, is to just take that on board. But a lot of people don't necessarily, or not a lot of people, but some people don't see it like that. And they'd rather preserve the idea that they have of themselves. Okay, no, I'm not a liar. No, that's just that, like they're just chatting shit. Like that's nothing to do with me. Like it's like your brain trying to protect itself from the potential that you might have done something bad. And certainly for me, like that's actually something that I grappled with as a young person, definitely is like, I struggled to take criticism because I would immediately see it as like, oh my God, they think that I'm a totally bad person. I've done one bad thing and that means objectively like I'm a bad person. But obviously, you know, maturing and realizing that we're multifaceted, you know, we're never gonna be doing anything perfectly. It's actually ridiculous to think that you could never do anything wrong. And I think as well, people pleasers always try and do the right thing. So when somebody criticizes them for maybe not doing the right or something, they missed it. They almost like feel cross with themselves. They had a blind spot and they missed that. That's certainly how I used to think. But yeah, absolutely getting to the point where it's not about whether it's not because you're a bad person. Everybody does things that like, and it's sometimes things aren't even inherently bad. It's just that sometimes we just do things that don't sit well with certain people, and that's just their particular boundary or their particular preference. And the point is we want to respect that. You know, I remember somebody saying, basically, I have a particular thing about, like, if somebody suggests they want to see me and they suggest it, I prefer if they then like sort of sort out the date and the day and that kind of thing. Just like if I were to suggest like, so-and-so, do you want to hang out? Like, let's go here, let's do it this time on this day. What do you think? I don't like it when somebody will suggest it and then be like, oh, where do you want to go? What do you want to do? What time? Oh no, not that time. This time. And I'm like, I remember saying it to one of my friends at the time and I just said, like, this is something that I kind of prefer if this happens. And it, I was worried that she was going to respond like, no, like, really defensive. And she didn't, because she saw it as just like, oh, this is just Hattie's preference.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I remember her saying that to me, and I think that's really how we should see it. It's just, it's not because she did anything wrong. Because for someone, that would be better because they'd want to decide. But for me, that's just was my particular... And I said it obviously in a very nice way, and she completely understood. But that was, that's just, that's not anything wrong. It's just that that was my preference, you know?
Yeah, I do like that preference. That makes sense. I might adopt that.
I might adopt that. Yeah, like, I like to, like... I think it's because I'm quite decisive, and I do struggle a little bit sometimes when there are people that are a little bit decisive, and then all the pressure's on me to then arrange it, especially when I haven't necessarily initiated it. So that's just like, I don't want to be like the mom, I guess. So mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that sort of thing. Yeah. Anyway,
yeah.
It's not every thing, but yeah.
No, I get that, but I feel like that's probably a little toxic trait that I have, is like, I'm indecisive sometimes, working on it, but this is one of those things.
It's actually a people pleaser thing, because it's like, it's not necessarily, again, it's not a bad thing, it's not an inherently bad thing, it's just like personal preference. It's like, you, as a people pleaser, you want to kind of like, oh, I want to make sure that they're happy, so like they can decide, and they, but then obviously for some people it's like, oh, why put the pressure on me? So it's completely like specific to people's situations. It's not inherently good or bad, but obviously, as I'm sure we'll get onto, that like, there are literally people that they are just categorically do things that are hurtful and unkind. Like, those things are very like trivial, you know. But
yeah. I do want to ask you a little bit more about people pleasing, because I feel like there's a narrative out there that says like people pleasers are like horrible people. And I feel like I am a recovering people pleaser too, and I feel like people pleasing comes from trauma. It comes from being in a very manipulative experience as a child, where whatever you do, whatever path you do, is always going to be viewed as wrong or bad. So you just end up in this space where you're constantly trying to fill the needs of other people, making them like the happiest as they possibly can be, so that you are safe, so that you don't get yelled at, so that like you start to really pay attention to the small little details that make them happy, so that you can like stop any potential of being yelled at. Yeah. Or being like, so yeah. I feel like we don't do it on purpose, but also taking accountability that even though it stems from trauma, like to work on it, how would you say you've healed from being a people pleaser, having those tendencies?
Doing things that scare me is mostly how I heal from it. So I just force myself to like do things that scare me. So like set a boundary, say no, and forcing myself to basically develop that self-trust, which is the antithesis of people pleasing. Because as a people pleaser, you don't trust yourself. You, again, like you said, adapt to what other people's needs are in order to survive.
Yeah.
And you have a very low sense of self, because your self is attached to the needs of somebody else. And I think that's kind of essentially how I've done it. And again, through TikTok, just like learning more about people pleasing, how it functions. I do have a relatively balanced view, I think, of people pleasing, because there are good things and bad things about it. Obviously, it's an inherently quite lovely thing. You know, you want to put people first, you want to like show respect for somebody else. But again, like you said, it comes from trauma. I sort of have been seeing a few videos, and I do to somewhat... It's, again, it's like this balanced view of like having empathy, but also like that accountability part, is that people pleasing can be manipulative, because if not necessarily most sinister way in terms of like, you know, you're trying to like be manipulative in the way we've experienced, which is like narcissism probably, or like mm-hmm. narcissism in people. But people pleasing is manipulative in the sense of you are essentially not being authentic, and you're adapting yourself to appease other people, and it kind of takes everything from you and leaves you of nothing. It's that sort of experience, the goal, certainly for me anyway, was that I wanted to be liked, so I would do anything in my power for somebody to like me. And that's kind of you're having to read that person, you're observing that person, you're doing everything that they like, and molding yourself, changing yourself like that, and then putting that behavior out is like, that is manipulative, but it's not in such a sinister way. It's you're literally just trying to survive, exactly as you explained, because that's how you survived as a child. And
yeah,
I think I going back to this kind of initial friend, one of the things they said to me was kind of like, after all I've done for you, and there are two kind of schools of thought. It's like, there are some people that say this because they've given absolutely everything of themselves to this person. And then there's some people that say it because they've been trying to get them to like them, get them to approve of them and so on. And all of it has been like manufactured in order to get a certain outcome from somebody. And when that outcome isn't achieved, they're like mad at that person. It's kind of like, so you did all that just so that I would do what you wanted, kind of thing. And I think that's where it kind of, it's fine. I think it's like normal when you're a child and you're at school and like probably young, when you're early 20s and that kind of thing. But I think taking it into adulthood just obviously doesn't serve you as the individual. Because it literally, you don't get what you want or anything like that. But it's also, it doesn't sort of promote authentic relationships. And people, I feel like sometimes people were a bit suspicious of me at school. I had a bit sort of like, oh, I know that I'm being managed, kind of thing. And I think that's where it's such a nuanced thing. And I have made a few videos about it being manipulative, because it is that kind of thing of like, you know, I'm molding my entire behavior to like appease this person, get this person to like me, rather than just being authentic and just being exactly who you are, which I think is not ideal. But again, it's like having that empathy for the fact that you had to do it to survive. Otherwise,
but it's also in a way very like re-traumatizing, because you have been taught ever since you were little that being your true authentic self is a bad thing. So when you're trying to get out of the people pleasing thing, and I've done the same as you, do what scares you. That's literally how to heal, is do what scares you. And it's learning who you are, first of all, learning who you are as a person, removing everybody else from your life, like not literally, but like figuratively removing their personalities and what they like from you, and trying to sit down and have a blank sheet of paper and figure out, what do I like? Who am I? And that is the scariest thing, because you're just like, what do you mean? I don't know who I am.
Yeah, exactly.
But my therapist, she was just like, this is the greatest time of your life. You get to have a blank sheet of paper and you don't know who you are, so go figure it out. And I'm like, what do you mean? What do you mean? She's like, do you like doing yoga? And I'm like, I don't know. She's like, go do yoga, figure out if you like it. And I'm like, what? So she ended up getting me to do things on a daily basis of like trying new things, like whether it was painting, to like music, to drawing, to whatever it was, whatever I could come up with to try it, and then to come back and be like, all right, tell me what your experience was. Do you like it? Do you not like it? And I started to slowly figure out who the hell I am.
it is that process. It's like trying, and also like trying different things with different people. Like, you know, figuring out who your true friends are literally by doing things that align with who you are. I mean, actually, funnily enough, posting on TikTok, talking about my thoughts and basically being my authentic self actually polarized some of my friends, because not because necessarily what I was saying, but rather than like, oh wait, Hattie's actually got like these thoughts and this personality that I don't necessarily get access to or like get to see, because maybe that's just not how they knew me. And you know, I think probably maybe seeing some of the things that I said, realizing that it resonated with them, is probably like, but I think yeah, exactly, like you know, it's when you're a people pleaser, you don't have a huge amount of self-trust, a sense of self, because it's so attached to like the needs of others. And it does take you like several years, to be honest, if not longer, it depends on how fast you're able to grow. But If you're doing, you know, this kind of healing work, it does take you years to figure out who you are. Like, something that I was definitely, I felt as a child was, because I'm quite sort of spiritual, like, huge amount of passion, a lot of fire, and I think that's something that was definitely seen as like negative, and I suppressed it for a really long time. And like now, you know, sometimes I feel flits of like anger, but obviously in a healthy way, because it's good to have anger, because it's like a protection for you. And you mm-hmm. know, embrace, like, for ages I was like, oh my god, I'm an angry person, I'm like really like over the top. And actually no, I'm just coming from all the way over here, like suppressing it, to actually just come to a middle ground, not being like aggressive and violent, but like, or jarring, but just come to this middle ground. But it can feel like so uncomfortable making that jump, because you're just not used to either coming into the middle, you're so on the other extreme of like swallowing it and you know, putting down like who you truly are, because it's always been seen as like a negative trait.
Yeah, no, I get that. I get that. A lot of the traits that we, I guess, have that are a little polarizing tend to be at least told to us that they're super negative. But I totally get that. I don't think I have the anger portion too much. I think what I'm working on is the judgy portion of it. I'm trying to get that balance where I'm like, I understand this person's side, that person's side, and not be too critical and judgmental. but
it's hard. Yeah.
It's a work in process.
Yeah, because you kind of gone from one place of like never judging anybody. I don't want to judge anybody. I don't want to like see anybody in a bad
The
light.
Benefit of the doubt.
Benefit of the doubt play.
So that sometimes I jump to like, oh my god, no.
Well, I sometimes have those feelings as well. I'm just like, no, come on, feel like you. Over time, you obviously will know that that's not the case. The more people you meet, the more you realise that there are lovely people out there, and that's, thank God. But when you've had so many, especially people that are close to you for so long, turn out to be knobs, then you're kind of like, oh, hang on. Like, these are the only people I've kind of had experience with, and quite a few of them suck, and that can be very, like, it can give you a bit of a warped view of it. But yeah, I mean, everybody's gonna have that kind of experience. I think for the anger thing for me was like, I swallowed it for so long because I saw it as such a negative thing, and I am an impassioned person, and that's what kind of like, I think is where my empathy lies, is through some of that frustration. You know, I'm really into my social justice, and that really pushes me, that anger and that kind of passion like pushes me to take action, and I'm really grateful for it. But yeah, I think definitely things like judgment, things like anger, like it's coming back to that, maybe like from one place, a little bit over here, and finally coming back to the middle.
Finding the yin yang, that's what I like to call it, is finding that yin yang. But I mean, for at least for me, for the people pleasing portion of it, it was difficult getting from to the middle, like from one side of the spectrum to the other side of the spectrum. It's like, it was a lot to deal with, and then getting the courage to set boundaries and to say no and to disappoint people.
Oh,
wow. That was the hardest thing. I mean, recently I just came back from a wedding, my friend's wedding, and there was one girl there who just really wanted me to go fishing with her. Just met her. Don't know who she is. At least I don't remember if I met her another time before, but fairly new. She wanted me to go fishing with her and one of my friends. And in my head, I'm just like, I don't like to fish. I hate fishing, actually. Like, I do not. I cannot fish. You will not see me catching a fish. Like, it freaks me out. I don't know. Just a thing. So I'm sitting there and she's like,
I'm fine. Creepy. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's like, come fishing. And I'm like, no, I hate fishing. No, I'm not going fishing. And it was like the first time ever in my life where I've noticed that she kept coming up to me. She kept like trying to push it, kept trying to like sell me on the idea to fish. And I kept saying no. I kept sitting on my boundary. And it was the first time ever in my life where I did not feel that guilt and that shame come over me. The first time where I was like, wow, I can say no and I don't feel bad at all, because I'm actually putting myself first and I really don't want to go fishing. It's so stupid. It's such a small thing. But back then, Yeah, back then I would have been like, okay, fine, I guess I'll go fishing.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that is what it is, isn't it? That guilt kind of keeps you doing things that you don't want to do. And also, I find it very annoying when, to be honest, like, people keep persisting, because it's like, you're not respecting what I've said the first time. Like, I think sometimes you can kind of, oh, come on, and then they're like, no, and you're like, right, tried a little sort of second time. Just, I think people forget that it's not fair to push it, because it's hard enough saying no the first time. And, you know, people that persistently, it's like, you're going to get, you're just irritating people now by, like, carrying on, because I've already said no, I've given you my answer, like, you're not going to persuade me. So, yeah, I do get frustrated when people keep pushing when you've said no. I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, it was very much overstepping boundaries, but, like, yeah. I kind of figured that it wasn't because she wants to hang out with me. It's because, like, the boat costed a certain amount of money, and the more people you get on the boat, the less, you know, she has to pay for it. So, like, I kind of figured that out afterwards, and I was like, me and you are not going to be friends, so I'm going to go over here and hang out with my boyfriend. So I was like, okay. But, I mean, it's kind of interesting going through all of these types of friendships, going through people-pleasing, I start to kind of see people's intent, see what they're, what the actual thing is behind it. And, I mean, she ended up randomly asking two people that she just met if they wanted to go fishing. So I was like, this girl's dead set on fishing. I was like, okay. All right. Good for you, girl. Not for me.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's also the payment thing that's a bit strange.
Maybe it's like an American thing. This is like normal here.
What? To try and persuade people because it's going to cost too much?
It's going to, yeah, so it costs less for somebody else. Yeah. It's like, okay. Don't come here.
Yeah.
No, it's a different mentality here. And I was able to see that when I lived in London. So I do love you guys so much. And the accent, I tried so hard and everyone was like, what are you doing?
Well, I think what I noticed about it, because I lived in America, I think I told you that I lived in America for a bit. And I think what I noticed, the reason why, like, Americans kind of struggle to do the British accent is it's very monotone. Whereas, like, American accents is, like, so melodic. So they try and apply that to, like, the British accent. So they get the technical accent right. But because of the melody, like, the sort of cadence in your voice, it just sounds funny.
Yeah, no, it's bad. It's bad. We're also very loud here, so I find it kind of refreshing that in UK everyone, like, talks calmly, and here we're like screaming in your face, but we're not actually, like, yelling, we're just loud people. So
you're just enthusiastic. I back it. Yeah.
No, but this has been wonderful speaking to you. Let's end it here, and maybe people will want to have a second episode with me and you again where we can dive deep into, like, other conversations. But this has been, like, super, super great.
Thank you, by the way.
I wanted to say any last words. I was like, maybe that's too much.
I think definitely, like, key takeaway is definitely do things scared, and, like, the way you're gonna kind of be less of a people pleaser, get what you want, like, become your most authentic self is doing those things that are scary and doing it anyway, and sitting in people questioning you, sitting in that moment when people kind of, like, either gaslight you, minimize you, and still being like, no, I back my experience. I think that's something that I wish.
Oh yeah, I agree 1,000%. Like, sitting there and finally not allowing people to doubt your own choices. 10 toes down, believe in yourself. If you've made a choice, stick by it. Even if you've made a mistake, I feel like a lot of my friends have, especially Nikki, my boyfriend, has, like, allowed me to see this in this way, where it's like, you have to have people in your life that allow you to make mistakes, where they know that you have the ability to fix that. So it's like they come up to me, they'll call me, they'll hold me accountable, they'll know I made a mistake, they won't shame me for it, but they also make sure that I fix it. Like, these, my friends, my boyfriend's not going to be in a relationship with me if I'm constantly making the same mistake, even though I've been told, and then not changing it, not holding myself accountable. So, like, I think that's also that balance right there. That's important.
Yeah. Absolutely. I completely agree. Well, thank you so much for having me on. And I really hope there's another episode we can do because there's so much to cover.
Been great. And I love talking to you. I love your videos. I am such a fan. But we'll talk soon. For those that are listening, if you have any extra questions, comments, you know where to send us DMs. So let us know what you want us to touch on. And if in the next episode, hopefully, if you want us to talk about anything more specific. But I had a great time. So thanks for joining, Hattie.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we'll end it there. Thank you. Bye.